It's called the world's biggest annual sporting event. We're talking about none other than the Tour de France on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Starts 2 weeks from today, Copenhagen, Denmark. But as the director said in his editorial this year, the script for the tour isn't written by drawing a map. The battle between the leaders is set to begin at unprecedented latitudes and continue at altitude almost right to the end. Join in on all things Tour de France, 800-212-234. Ed Tiles is a Racine native and bicycling enthusiast teaching a community college course all about the tour. Ed, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, good morning. I'm happy to be here.
Good morning. What does the Tour de France mean to you?
What it means to me is pretty simple. I attended in 2005, watched four stages, and walked away from that believing it is the single greatest sporting event on the face of the earth.
Wow, that was profound. What made it
so? I don't know about profound.
You know, for people who don't watch the tour, why is this sporting event, among all the other sports they could watch, why is this worth taking in?
The biggest reason, or the greatest reason, would simply be you have 21 days of racing over a period of 23 days. They have two rest days. And over that time, they are going to ride in excess of 2,100 miles. So from a pure physical point of view, I can't imagine greater athletes than professional cyclists. And then the second part of it is, and I've been to the Super Bowl and Rose Bowl and F1 racing, etc. It is the second largest attended sporting event next to World Cup soccer on the face of the earth. It's just an amazing spectacle to see with all the folks that attend the race in the different stages.
Can you, because you've been there, can you give us a sense of the terrain and really how high is high in these altitudes these riders are going through?
Boy, you know, I was just looking earlier today or this week at the different stages, and in the 2022 tour, there are going to be 11, I'm going to call them mountain stages, but six of them are high mountains that include as much as 15,000 vertical feet of climbing over those stages. I mean, think about this. A great perspective on this. One of the stages has a 24-degree climb gradient. If you multiply times two and then think of a 45-degree angle, that's how high they're going to climb. And that's over 7 or 8 kilometers. Think about that. Some of us can't walk up anything.
That's right. Let alone get a bike up of that. How do the teams work and how they choose a leader? How does that work?
There are, you know, they're built around the jerseys. The yellow is obviously the most famous, and that's the overall winner. Mm-hmm. There's a green jersey, which is for sprint teams, and there's a polka dot jersey that is for teams with great climbers. So very quickly, obviously the yellow jersey leader is going to be a great all-arounder. He can sprint, he can climb, he can hold on flat stages. Sprinters are just as described, they're just fast men, and so you build a team around them. And in the polka dot, of course, are great mountain climbers, and you have to make a decision as the director of the team, what kind of team do I have? And then you build your team around a great leader, a great sprinter, or a great climber.
I've always kind of wondered what happens on those rest days. I mean, these men must be absolutely exhausted, and you've got two rest days. I mean, what?
You're going to love this. Okay. You know what they do on their rest days?
Please tell.
They ride.
What?
They ride. Now, I'm not talking about a competitive ride that day, but they continue to ride because of, you know, I can't I'm not qualified to discuss the physical nature of that, but they ride so that the muscles don't lock up, so that they just stay ready. I don't know how else to describe it.
Keep moving. Keep those legs moving.
That's right. That's right.
We have Racine native Ed Tiles with us, experienced cyclist, devoted fan of the Tour de France, and he'll make us one. Raced in the U.S. National Senior Olympics back in 2011, our guide to the 109th Tour de France. You can join in 800-642-1234. Nancy is joining us from Sun Prairie. Nancy, hi.
Hi, this is Nancy from Star Prairie.
Oh, Star Prairie. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I would like to say that I am a dedicated viewer of the Tour de France. I record it overnight so I can watch it, early in the morning because I get up early. And what I really enjoy is the coverage. Besides the bicycle athletes, I like to watch the countryside, how the farmers and people of the different villages have decorated the roadside or their fields. And I like viewing the architecture of the towns and the villages that they're going through. It's just a highlight of my day. I plan my month of July around the Tour de France, so nothing interferes with my viewing. And I watch the whole race every day until the finish. And I just love it. I've been watching it now for 2 years, and I do bicycle myself, but not as much as these athletes do. And it's just uplifting. It's just the cheerfulness of the people watching and just the enthusiasm. It's just wonderful to watch.
Oh, I love your description of it, Nancy. So if you had a dream come true and you could attend the tour, where would you go to watch it?
I think I would watch somewhere that's more out in the country, instead of up in the mountains. I think I would like to be in the countryside with the people there who are viewing. And last year when that lady stepped out and kind of interfered with the bicyclist and they had that big crash, that was just heartbreaking for me to see that, because those athletes put a lot of time and energy into training, and yeah, it's just great.
Oh, Nancy, thank you so much for calling in. Ed, Nancy's been bitten by the tour bug.
What I would tell Nancy is that we watched four stages, we being my wife and I, in a 2005 tour. And I believe there were two great places to watch it. One was on a mountain stage because, of course, the riders are spread out so you get to see them for a longer period of time. And the second would be in the Champs-Élysées in Paris, because they make a number, I think it's six circuits are in Paris. So you get to see the riders, not just for a few seconds as they're speeding by, but over and over again. And just imagine, and I don't think this is an exaggeration, close to 500,000 people lining this circuit in different locations. It's incredible to watch.
Wow. Are there pro U.S. cyclists who are you hoping to see in the tour next month? What about the Americans?
I saw an early start list. This doesn't mean it's final, but there are five Americans on this early start list, with probably the best of the five is a young man by the name of Sepp Kuss. He happens to be from Durango, Colorado. In last year's Tour de France, he won a stage, and he is riding for probably the favored team, and that is Jumbo-Visma. And he's just the term is domestique. He's probably one of the best domestiques out there right now. He is there to protect the lead rider. In his case, it's a gentleman by the name of Primoz Roglic, and he does a great job of it.
Yeah, why do riders from a team bike in front of their team leader?
So typically you will find, there's eight riders. You're not going to get eight riders to stay together on every stage, but typically you'll find at least five of those eight protecting their leader, and that would be more likely than three in front, the team leader, and then one more behind, at least one more behind. That way they're protecting him from other riders, And they're also protecting them from different elements, which could be wind, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. Ed Tiles with us, avid cyclist, has enjoyed the professional cycling world for over 30 years. Our guide to the Tour de France starts July 1st. Join in on the 21-stage race of physical and mental endurance, the things you want to know about it, the history, what you watch or what you don't watch about the Tour. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Ed Tiles here on the Ideas Network. Wear the yellow jersey, be out front on the Tour de France. What can Americans learn from the oldest and most prestigious event in the cycling world? Questions we're exploring here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Tour de France director Christian Prudhomme discussed the importance of women in the cycling world in the launch of Tour de France Femme later next month. Here he is speaking through an interpreter at the kickoff event for this year's tour.
The challenge for us all, our challenge together, is to make sure that more and more people talk about women's competitions.
Join in on the tour, the women's event, your experiences with the Super Bowl of the cycling world, 800-642-1234. Ed Tiles has been to a Tour de France, as we talked about, and other professional cycling events with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's bring on another fan, Rebecca, joining us from Newton. Rebecca, hi.
Yes, hello. I'm just super excited to turn on the radio this morning and hear you're talking about the Tour de France because nobody talks about it. And I tell people I watch it every year and they're like, what? What's that? So a lifelong fan, I've been watching it since Greg LeMond won and I'm 50. So I watch it every year. I do, like the previous caller said, I tape the entire thing. I watch it throughout the day. I fast forward through some of it, but I usually see all the highlights. Love the commentators, love everything about it. My dream would be to go see the Tour de France, a stage at the Champs-Élysées, maybe a mountain stage. And we're kind of planning that for retirement, that we're going to go.
Oh, I love that. It's a bucket list. I love it. Rebecca, what keeps you glued to it, though? Like, what really holds you?
It has everything. It has a little bit of the Travel Channel and a little history of the countries they're in. It has the scenery. It has excitement, crashes, strategy. It's just so involved, the team aspect of it. You know, you can watch a bike race and you have no clue what's going on. When you watch it for years and years, you know the strategy. And when you get into the strategy, you just get hooked. What will this guy do? What will the leader do? What will the domestiques do? And, oh, now they're coming to the feedback station. And it's just so exciting. Oh, they're going to be on the cobblestones. Now we got to watch that stage because there could be a crash. Or it's just, you never know. It's so unpredictable. And it has everything that any sporting event has plus more because it's so long.
Oh, and Rebecca, you
long, I mean.
Rebecca, you build a very strong case indeed. Ed, how about that?
You know, I would just echo what Rebecca just said. Obviously, mostly being in France, there's incredible scenery. There's incredible history that we don't have here, meaning the castles they ride by and just the different places they ride by. And then what you see on television with all the sunflower fields and the vineyards, etc. It just becomes a beautiful place to watch it. And then if you're an enthusiast, which Rebecca obviously is, you're seeing a feat, athletic feat, that is just beyond comparison to anything else that's out there. I don't care if it's the NFL, the NBA, or whatever. Remember what I said earlier, 21 days, 2,100 miles. It's crazy. It's crazy.
I wonder, too, how their bikes, that their bikes don't fail them on the ride, going up and down these mountains, this terrain, this distance.
You know, I'm laughing a little bit because I still remember the first bike I bought in 1988. I think I paid $300 for it. Now those same bikes made out of incredible materials, carbon fiber, titanium, are $10,000. So, you know, how they're built by one of the world's largest bike manufacturers, Trek, are just amazing. They're just, they are machines that you still have to pedal, but they're still machines beyond compare. And so that obviously helps.
Jeff is joining us, chiming in from Omaha, Nebraska. Jeff, hi, go ahead. What's on your mind about the tour?
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I have a question for your guest. My wife and I were huge fans of the Tour de France, got up early in the morning to listen to the dulcet tones of Phil Liggett narrating the tour. But we really got disenchanted in the doping era, characterized by Lance Armstrong's now disqualified wins. For the guests, I'd like to know how I can build faith back for the Tour de France and still be excited about it. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff.
I've thought about this myself. I was a huge fan of Lance Armstrong and George Hincapie and Christian Vandeveld and all those riders. Here's how you build your faith back. Last year, out of roughly, you know, 176 riders, there was only one failed drug test. I just think WADA, the World Anti-Doping Association, has finally gotten ahead of the teams and the riders of that existed in that area in terms of testing. And if you're going to dope, now you're going to get caught. And if you get caught, for the most part, your career is over. So there's the incentives. WADA's smarter. You don't want to do it because you want to make a career out of it. And as I said just a second ago, only one rider failed a doping test last year. I like to believe that's because that's the only doping that went on last year.
So you feel like the tour just building a more robust, intense doping testing will help clean up the sport?
There are very few riders. David Millar might be one from a number of years ago who was tested positive, finished his doping ban, and was able to ride again. That doesn't happen very often. A team just doesn't want that kind of rider on their team anymore. So if you're caught these days, for the most part, your career is over.
There was also last year on the tour, competitors suspected one another of mechanical doping, like having motors or other technology. Can you help us with that?
I'm laughing a little bit about that because I can only imagine, you know, on the down tubes and the bike frame, what in the world kind of motor could you put in there that would actually help? That's number one. And number two, the bikes are all weighed and X-rayed. So when I first started hearing about that or reading about that, I just frankly just laughed. It's not going to happen.
Another question here. There's so much hydrating that the riders have to do. Where do they make pit stops? Where do riders go to the bathroom?
Okay, I will answer that question with the term they use. They, as a protocol, there might be locations along the route where all the riders are going to go off the road and stop. But if that isn't one of those locations, the term they use is called au naturel, and I'll let you decide what the definition of that is.
Okay. Talking with Ed Tiles, a Wisconsin native bicycling enthusiast, preparing us for the Tour de France. You can join in 800-642-1234. David in Manitowoc is next. David, hi.
Hi. Great topic. I watch at least the highlights for years. I just had a bike. It's how we got around as kids. But I wanted to call and mention that this is very opportune because the Maritime Classic Bike Race Series is happening in Manitowoc on Sunday. It was around for a while, took a hiatus, and this is its second year back. We're pretty excited about it. It starts at 9 a.m. right down on the lakeshore, and it's a typical Wisconsin festival, but this one's around the bike racing. So there's food and
I love it.
To do and
yes. David, thank you so much for bringing that up. And, you know, we're out of time, Ed, but you started bike racing in your 60s and you still love it.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I was 40 before I really started to get serious about riding. And I was 62 before I participated in my first race. And I just got slaughtered. I was surprised. I thought, how many people at 62 are going to be out there and beat me? Well, most of them did.
Oh, Ed, thank you so much for joining us.
This was fun. This is fun. Thank you.
Racine native Ed Tiles, avid cyclist for over 30 years living in North Carolina. Ahead this hour, we talk RAGBRAI, the epic 8-day rolling bike fest across Iowa with a nurse practitioner who has done about 20 of them. News is next. It started as a casual bike ride across Iowa in 1973, and as they say, the rest is history. We're talking about RAGBRAI, the Register's annual great bike ride across Iowa on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer. According to the Des Moines Register last week, more than 17,000 weekly and day-long riders already are registered for the nation's largest annual cycling tour. Join in on RAGBRAI, your stories, your memories, please, your tips, 800-642-1234. Amber Carlson is a triathlete, veteran RAGBRAI rider, and volunteer. She's an acute care nurse practitioner in Green Bay. Amber, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
Okay, so RAGBRAI, explain how RAGBRAI works, because Iowans, they really pump this up. They call it the world's biggest annual mobile party.
Yeah, we call it spring break for 50-year-olds. So the way that it works, you really do have to sign up a year in advance, because the tickets do go pretty fast, although a lot of people do the ride on 1, 2, 3 days without a wristband. That is the official RAGBRAI ticket. A lot of people like myself come from another state, and I go by charter. There's about 40 charters that you can pick through, roughly about $400 for a full week's worth of transportation. So they pick you up at the end site, and then you travel the first day to the beginning of the ride, and then subsequently every day they bring your gear with, and then, you know, at the end of the ride you pick up your tent, you put it up, and you start all over again the next day. So
you tent along the way?
I do. A lot of people will have family bring campers. Some people will bring their tents with other family members. Myself, I just do this through a charter. But yes, typically speaking, it is tenting.
And when you, and so with all the tent gear and stuff, that is on the charter. Is that right?
Yes.
Or I think
yep,
they call it the SAG wagon. Am I getting the lingo, the support and gear wagon? Or is that something
else? They are different. They are different. So the charter is who provides you with the movement of equipment, and the SAG is who fixes your equipment if you break down.
Oh, okay. Because that's bound to happen.
Yes. And last year we had the Air Force as our SAG.
Okay. And so there are also these meeting towns, and if you can't bike on, they will also try to get you to these meeting towns. Can you explain, you know, what happens if you just can't pedal on?
If you can't pedal on, there's usually transportation, like buses within each town, and they have the ability to take your bike with them onto the end destination. So if you're not able to do the full, I don't know, let's say it's 70 miles, you only do 30, then there is also multiple SAGs that can and do help bicyclists that can't make it all the way.
Would you consider, Amber, is RAGBRAI a race? Do people take it seriously as a race?
No. I smile and giggle at that. There's some of us that will do centuries every day. That's just because we're there and we want a bike. But that's a select group of people. The rest of them, it's just purely for outdoor fun activity. You have to experience to understand 10,000 bicyclists all in one spot going from town to town. It's just the environment that you're in that's intoxicating.
When you say centuries, what do you mean by that?
100 mile or more bike ride a day. So if the route isn't mapped out as 100 miles, there are several of us that get together and we map out a route that adds on the extra mileage to make it a century every day.
Oh, goodness gracious. So basically, approximately, if you go the route, how many miles do riders go each day?
Well, it depends. Okay. Every day is a little bit different. And you get these routes the year before. So a lot of people will pick the particular days they want to go on, depending on the mileage.
Mm-hmm.
Some may be 40 miles, some might be 125. And it depends on the day and the towns that they have arranged with to have us come through. Because as you can imagine, 10,000 people coming through your town, it's a big deal. It brings in a lot of revenue.
I would imagine it. Town. Yeah, I would imagine.
Yes.
and
it's a whirlwind.
You describe the energy as contagious. I would imagine, you know, that is helps you keep going back to it. What keeps you doing it year after year?
Oh, it's fun. It's just pure fun. I love to bike. First of all, I like to be outside doing something all the time. So, and my family is still living in. I have family and friends that live in Iowa, so it's always fun. But it's just the pure environment of being in thousands of people that have a like interest. So you meet people from everywhere around, literally around the world.
And as you go along, what do you see along the way? What does it look like? What do you pass?
So we have a lot of, you know, it's Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Back roads, no gravel, thankfully. A lot of beautiful, you know, little towns, little quaint areas, little parks, rivers, little lakes. It depends on the day. It's rolling hills. There's nothing very drastically steep in Iowa. I think last year might have been maybe total of 7,000 feet of elevation, and that's over 8 days. You know, so it depends. Every route's different, though. So every year they kind of switch it up to give these other little towns opportunity to have rag ride.
To have the spectacle, yes. I would imagine. Yeah. I would imagine you pass a cornfield or two.
Oh, very many.
We're talking with Amber Carlson, an acute care nurse practitioner in Grebe Bay, veteran of many RegBri tours across Iowa. You can pick her brain on RegBri and join in with your RegBri memories, your moments, your tips, 800-642-1234. So as a nurse, you also volunteer in the medical tents at the end of each day's ride, I understand. Tell us about that.
Oh, it's very simple, and there's many of us. So for each of the charters, they usually have 1 to 10, depending on how big the charter is, medical personnel that just help out in the everyday basic stuff like scrapes and cuts and rashes, rug, you know, burn. If they may have fallen off the bike, if they're injured, simple things. The big stuff we send right to the hospital, but typically I don't see anything more than, you know, usually it's the my butt hurts because I haven't been on my saddle a lot.
What is your advice when you have those types of abrasions and it does really hurt on that saddle?
You know, some of the time we will take a, we will tell them to take a day off. We depending on how severe things may be, we will have them. Those are the typical ones that will go with the SAG to the next town, because it's just A, it's not comfortable, and we don't want them to injure themselves anymore. But for the most part, it's, they have nicely, they do have like a masseur massage table there for a lot of the like neck muscle, back muscle, leg muscle pain. I'd say hydrate is huge. That's a, one of the biggest issues that we see is dehydration. So in those situations, if we can't take care of them, we send them on to the local emergency department to get a little bit of hydration. And it, depending, some of them go back and do it the next day, but if they're smart, they'll take a day off in between.
Hmm. Are there stops along the way for hydration and fueling back up?
Oh, yes. Those little towns that we're talking about, each one of them is specifically made for that. So they'll have multiple different local mom and pop shops out there with vendors, food, drink. And, you know, the fire department always has fresh water, whether via some type of device that they've put out. It's, they make something new with every town.
You mentioned at the top about the spring break for 50-year-olds. What is the atmosphere like for at the end of a day's ride and partying? What do you see there?
Well, I am not one of those people. So
that's oh, come
why
on.
That's why I'm in the medic tent.
You yeah, need to I bear enjoy- your soul on Wisconsin Public Radio.
I enjoy watching it, but I certainly don't want to go 100 miles feeling it the next day. And I'm shocked and amazed at how their bodies recover so they can do that. But they have some skill. But usually at the end of the day, we're all pretty skilled now, knowing you get up very early in the morning, get on the road by 6 to 7 a.m., if not earlier, just because of the pavement heat.
Mm-hmm.
So typically the rides for people are done around 2 to 3 o'clock, depending on the length. Sometimes a little earlier, sometimes a little later. So you can imagine they have time to shower, nap, and then are a little bit revived by the end of the evening.
We have a veteran Reg Bry rider and volunteer, medical volunteer, Amber Carlson of Green Bay, our guide. Still time to talk about your Reg Bry moment, the tire dipping tradition out, you know, just out on the Iowa open road in July. Next year marks 50 years of Reg Bry. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Amber Carlson here on the Ideas Network. It is For the Love of Reg Bry here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. I think of Reg Bry as 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. It's like if you live in the Midwest, you know someone who knows someone who, and then you'll find some connection to the oldest, largest, and longest recreational bicycling tour event in the world. Or as the Des Moines Register, they wax poetic. Reg Bry is about overcoming, about growth. It's about finding yourself in the middle of nowhere, about changing your life in 7 days flat. Join in 800-642-1234. Amber Carlson, a Green Bay veteran Reg Bry rider, with us for about 9 more minutes. Gary is with us in De Pere. Gary, hi. What's your connection to Reg Bry?
Well, I don't have a connection to Reg Bry, but I've done several other smaller tours, and I've always been interested in doing Reg Bry, but what has kind of kept me from doing it is the numbers, and I'm concerned about the logistics of the camping. Mainly, is it difficult to get a camping spot, or do they have large school areas set aside, or... You know, I'm just I'm interested in doing it. But the camping logistics, I need to know more. So
yes, Gary, thank you, Amber.
So if you go through a charter, those camping sites are picked out for you. You will always find a place to camp if you go through a charter. And you are right. They do plan ahead with school areas, school fields, churches, local farmers that may be just on the border of the town. But I have never in all of my years had an issue with my camping. Now, if you go as an individual without doing a charter, you may have some issue. You'll have to do a little planning. So that would just be charting out what township you were going to be going through, if it was like a 2-day or a 3-day, and then figure out from there where you could camp that a charter hasn't already taken. So it can be done. I've actually done it both ways before. So I actually did the charter last year, and then maybe 2 to 3 years ago, I actually had my family take my camper, and we mapped it out, and I got to more do a luxurious tour versus a lay on the ground.
Well, I was gonna ask you, you know, how rustic are the campsites, or is this camp? Can you find a shower as part of the camping along the way through the charter?
So every town's a little different, but I promise you that they have a shower there. You may have to go onto a big semi that has individual shower rooms. Mm-hmm. That for the charters that you have, you typically will, you can pay per day, or every time you go there, you just give them a coin, a specific coin for the shower, and you can either go into a warm one or a cold one, depending on the weather you have. But otherwise, the schools open up, the churches open up, because they know that we are there throughout that. Typically, it's only a day, if you can imagine coming in, stopping.
Wow, sleeping, yes.
Getting up and moving out. So it's really a whirlwind. But there is always... I won't say it's luxurious. It's definitely not, but they do bring in like portalettes, and then, like I said, the semis all have probably about 20 showers on each one of them. Mm-hmm. So depending on the time you get back, if you're smart, you get in there right away.
Gary, is this putting you at ease at all about the logistics?
Yeah. No, you've answered my question. I think the charter for me would be probably the way to go, but no, I appreciate that. It seems simpler than I had envisioned it. So it sounds like it'd really be a lot of fun. So I think I might pursue it. So.
Well, Gary, thank you. Yes, thank you for calling in. So, Amber, you know, what advice do you have for first-time Rag Bri writers and even getting a spot? You mentioned you got to think about this a year in advance.
Yes. So my first advice would be figure out if you want to do the whole thing or if you're going to do day by day. If you're doing the whole thing, then I would recommend the charter. If you're doing day by day, then you're going to need to figure out with family, friends, the logistics of drop-off, pickup. So it's a little bit more difficult. It's doable, but it is a little bit more difficult. The second thing I would say is hydrate. I literally start drinking water well over 2 weeks, and hardcore water. I always have one in my hand 2 weeks prior to doing the ride. Because, for example, last year, the pavement heat was 110 for the majority of every single day. We had no rain, no wind, and you take a huge chance with just injury. And like I said, this is 50-year-old camp here. We're not We're not young.
We're not spring chickens.
take care of your body. But get on your bike. If you think that you can do 100 miles without getting on your bike a few times, well, I might be seeing you in my tent at the end of the day.
Talking with Amber Carlson, nurse practitioner, veteran triathlete, Reg Bry writer for years. Call in with your questions, things that make you apprehensive, things that you love about Reg Bry. 800-642-1234. Amber, what about the bike? What is the best kind of bike for Reg Bry?
So, you know, it's funny because there's every kind of bike out there. honestly, there is single speed bikes. There are tandem bikes. There are electric bikes. This was the first year last year that I really saw more of those. And I believe that more people participated because of it. And the crowd was a little bit older because of it. They were able to go the distance where, you know, doing 100 miles with a little bit of extra oomph is not a bad thing. Personally, last year I took my time trial bike, which probably isn't the smartest thing to do, but I was training. Road bikes, there are gravel trails. So some people do take hybrid or gravel bikes. Mm-hmm. I'm not a gravel person myself, but Iowa does have a lot of gravel trails. So if you want to break off from your route, you can. They typically have gravel trails there for you to take as well. You don't need to follow the gut tour. You can actually veer off and they'll have a tour for you on the gravel.
What is the tradition of dipping a tire into the Mississippi River about?
It's funny. I'd have to actually look where it started, but it's just to say at the end, you have to. So that's for people that complete the whole thing, by mm-hmm. the way. Typically it's for first timers. But a lot of people doing that entire route, it's a challenge. So it's kind of like a passing of the rite, or that's your trophy, that's your medal.
Have you done it?
Oh, sure. Sure.
So you just like walk your bike down there and
yep. That's it. That's all it is.
Oh, Amber, this has been great. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing these experiences.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Amber Carlson is an acute care nurse practitioner in Green Bay, triathlete, Reg Bry rider for at least 20 years, maybe not even counting anymore, set to ride across Iowa again, Reg Bry, July 24th through 30th. And earlier, we talked with Racine native Ed Tiles about the Tour de France. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show. Ride on here on the Ideas Network.